We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
Well, how about them fucking dogs? That's what I told them.
Hope it didn't take that long again. Go dogs.
Yo, welcome to the 100 Cent for Podcast. It is your host, or one of your hosts, a co-host, Lamar Lovelace. I'm in the building. I got Trigger Trey. I got the Big G Foster's in the building. We're still looking for Graham Coffee. He's a little bit down and out, but hopefully he can get on tonight. Fellas, what's going on?
Hey, man, I'm back, like I say every week, and I'm happy to be able to say this every week. I woke up, and the dogs won. So I'm good. All is well. All is good in the world.
What's up with you, Trey?
Enjoying being undefeated. Most boys' college team got more than two L's on their record. No.
Ooh.
That sounds so bad.
We ain't gonna say no names.
But we ain't gonna say no names, you know. Bama got two.
Florida got
Florida got about five.
It's nice sitting at the top of the mountaintop. You know what I mean? Like, you can sit back and you can laugh at people, especially when when we used to get those jokes cracked about us, about having one loss, two losses, not being in the middle of the hunt. But now you can actually laugh at people, crack jokes about them, memes, gifts. Trey, you always got a whole bunch loaded up, locked and loaded for every school.
it's cool because you know your team's gonna have your back.
Facts.
You know what I mean? Everybody's beatable, but if we keep in the book, you can count on the dogs and the way they do.
Always.
Facts,
and man. And the leadership. So I feel confident talking my talk every day, every week. Whoever wants some can get it.
Yeah, man. It's funny because everybody keeps bringing it up. Like, how confident are you in the dogs? For me, it's a thing of I'm just confident in the whole program itself. You know, I mean, you can get all the five stars you want. Even Lane Kiffin was talking about, I was watching something with the SEC insider. He was like, yeah, we beat them down with all those five stars. He was talking about Texas A&M. It don't matter. But if you got the program and the collective program doing what the program is doing, the coaching staff, the administration, the players, the community, the fans, man, when you got a whole big old synergistic ball going at people, it's going to be tough, man. It's going to be tough to beat that team. And it reminds me of those Bama teams back in the day, because that's the way they were, right? They were a wrecking crew. Everything from the top to the bottom, everybody was rolling in the same direction, and now they're not. So you see what happens when those wheels come off, and hopefully Georgia maintains what they do. Hopefully Kirby continues to bring in the people he brings in so that we can continue to keep this thing rocking, because right now they're looking like they could be a dynasty if they really want to, if they really keep everything together with all the types of players that they keep bringing in.
Listen, it's amazing where they are. Like, they are a legitimate repeat team, and you don't see that very often. It's hard to repeat as champion, and it's right there in front of them. You know what I mean? They got to beat some teams. You know, they still got some games left. But, like, it's right there in front of them, and they have enough talent to run the table.
Well, they definitely don't talk about you repeating when you lose 15 to 16 people to the NFL draft.
Oh, no.
Especially the Georgia. Now, back in the day, you might talk about a Miami doing it. You know what I'm saying? They used to talk favorably about USC reloading or Alabama reloading. But, you know, we got
to – what happened to the LSU team from 2019? They, before Georgia last year, they had the most players ever drafted. And what happened in 2020?
Culture. Culture. It ain't like they weren't recruiting. You know what I mean? They got their share of five stars. They got their share of high four stars. They got the big stadium, the fans, and all that. But culture, you know, that's the way I look at it.
Yep. They built, Dawes built the program that's built to, you know, stand the test of time and to stand the adversity that's bound to come. So hopefully they stay on that track. And, you know, it seems like they have the right mindset. You know, they believe in what Kirby's saying and Kirby's, you know, mantra is like, you know, I forgot what it was verbatim, but basically, you know, when you get complacent, you know, that's when it all falls apart. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure he stays on them boards like it ain't nothing. Like, yeah. They stay on the boards like they 0-10 and not 10-0.
Yeah, I mean, that's something you got to do with teenagers. You know what I mean? I mean, it ain't like these guys are 25, 26-year-old men, NFL mm-hmm. players. You know what I'm saying? These guys are young boys coming out of high school, really getting their foot, you know, their footing in terms of just understanding life, being able to juggle life. Now you got NIL. Now you got all the fanfare. That's tough. So I got to give compliments to Kirby and the crew.
I look at a kid like, and this is not to bring up his misstep, because everyone has a misstep, but you bring up a kid like Javon Butler. You know, he had his misstep. You know, missed a game, mm-hmm. came back and missed a beat, and probably stepped up his play.
Yeah, you know, right.
You know what I mean? Like, he knows, okay, I messed up, you know, but I got something good in front of me. Mm-hmm. And he's taking that, he's attacked the guy every week, you know, like it could be his last. Because I'm pretty sure, you know, when you get in a little trouble, you start thinking, hey, you know, they could be taken away from me that quick. It's happened to many, many others before. But I believe it's a baseline, like you said, culture within that program that won't let guys, you know, fall to the wayside.
Yeah. And it's funny, too, because everybody thinks that they could take any coach and they can replicate that culture. And they can't. I mean, it takes a special kind of program. It actually takes, like I said, a collective community, because even the school got to be bought in with it. You know what I mean? Like, everybody keeps talking about who's going to replace Nick Saban eventually, who would take over Clemson, who would take over whatever it may be. The school's got to be locked in. The school's got to be fully invested, and it's got to be a collective culture to make that thing play off the way it's supposed to play off, because there's a lot of guys that get great opportunities. Florida's a good school. How come they can't continue to do what they need to do? But they can't, because they don't get the guy that matches the intensity of the program, what's required, and everything else that's around it. So that's the reason why they can't bounce back. But it's interesting. It's a whole interesting dilemma right now as to what the Dogs are doing. Obviously, we just came off that 45-19 victory down there in Starks, Vegas. Cold day. Stetson, 289, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. But it was still a good day. They didn't run the ball very well outside of that 70-yard touchdown run by Ladd. I mean, it wasn't a very productive day. Running the football was opportunistic. You know, they got the first downs when they needed to get the first downs. But what did you guys think about that game coming off of that down there in Starks, Vegas?
They did what they had to do. I did expect a better rushing effort, being that, you know, they only play, you know, three down up front. But, you know, Mississippi State, they played the run well. But I also think there was a mix of us, you know, working our passing game, trying to get some more guys involved. See, Lag got his swagger back. He's, you know, he had a lull a few weeks ago, you know, multiple weeks, you know. But again, like I said before, with, you know, bullying off-field stuff, Lag was having some issues on the field, you mm-hmm. know, for a couple of games. You know what I mean? Couldn't hold on to the ball. And things of that nature, you know, some drops. And like, the coach of that team wouldn't let him stay in that funk. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, he got himself up out of there, and he's, you know, he's balling out, you know. So, and that continued last weekend. You know, I wonder what Trey has to say.
Like you said, like lad balled out. Then you hear in post game interviews of his teammates talking about him. That culture is just built stronger that all of them love seeing their teammates ball out. You hear several guys saying they're just glad to see him just make play because he does it every day in practice. And I thought the offensive line looked good and pass block, but run blocking we kind of. But Mississippi State played a 3-3-5 defense, like George said, they're good on the run. So it's just good to see our receivers actually stepping up more and more every week.
Yeah, I agree with both of you guys. I mean, me and George brought it up last show. You know, we were talking about that 3-3-5 defense, that they might have some issues running the football, right? I mean, that's what it's built to do. It's built to suppress the run game and be opportunistic on the back end. But obviously, Mississippi State couldn't be opportunistic on the back end. I mean, they got the two picks, but Georgia was just too much for them. I mean, just in terms of scheme, drawing up plays, anytime that they really wanted to score, I was going back looking at film today. Anytime that they really wanted to score, they could have. But Georgia continued to try to run the ball. They wanted to, you know, continue to try to pound it and make it a complimentary game. But they didn't have to. If they really wanted Stetson to sit back there and throw 50 times and go for 400, he could have. But it wasn't. They just didn't want that type of game. But it's funny going back to what you mentioned about Ladd that you brought up. I mean, he is a kid that's been up and down this year. He's had his great games, but he's had his bad moments, fumbled punts, you know, drops. And like you just mentioned, Trey, these guys never got down on him. The fans may have. I've heard fans say, oh, it's time to move on to somebody else. But the players never did. The coaches never did. And they understand what they have and that those things can be corrected. And when he comes out and he balls the way he did. I mean, everybody just forgets about it, right? But the players don't. That culture just maintains a lot of love for each other, and you see it. And you know, and I was going to ask you, George, because, I mean, you have your scouting experience. When scouts go in and they're looking at a top-flight program like a Georgia, an Alabama, you know, the Ohio States, whatever it may be, obviously they're looking at those big guns. Those guys are going to go first round, second round, third round, all that stuff. But how do they look at a guy that doesn't get but so much time, but yet they can still see that this guy has the goods to possibly play in the league? How do they evaluate that? What goes through the thought process maybe?
Well, you're looking at traits, first of all. Mm-hmm. You know, you're looking at some traits, and then you can see if they're productive with the time they do get on the field. Mm-hmm. You know, but mainly traits. You're gonna have a guy just say like a guy like Rosemary Jackson. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get a ton of targets. He probably gets more than he would if, you know, AB was playing, you know, but mm-hmm. don't get a ton of reps. But you look at him, he has decent size, you know. He produces when he gets the chance to. He's shown ability to catch the ball with his hands and, you know, with the nice end zone catch, you know. For the touchdown, like you get guys like this, you're gonna end up with guys. You got tight end splitting time. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But you're gonna look at the traits, man. It's all about traits because some of these guys that you see balling out in the NFL right now, they didn't have a lot of time. Myself, I was a trait guy. I didn't have a ton of starts at Georgia. I rotated a lot. We had some senior linemen my senior year. It was three of us, and so it was a three-man rotation. And so, you know, I was drafted, you know, fairly high, I presume, off of traits and what film they did see on me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, for guys that don't get a whole bunch of burn, it's going to be really traits.
Hey, fellas, I think we got – let's see, this might be Graham Coffee joining. Let's see what we got here. Yes, it is, sir. It is Graham Coffee joining. But yeah, that's interesting. I brought that up because, you know, when you look at a Georgia, how loaded it is, and you start looking at the recruiting, you start looking at the depth, you start looking at all these guys that, that really want all that extra time, right? They really want to play, but their goal is to get to the league. And so what happens if they don't get that extra time? What happens if they don't get that opportunity? But I think when you're as loaded as what Georgia is, you know, that's why I brought it up asking you as a former scout as well to figure out, okay, what do these guys look for? How can they generate their opportunity if they don't get the amount of snaps? You know, how much interest is thrown in by the coaches, the coaching staff, things like that. I just wanted to bring that up. What's up, Graham? Oh, I think Graham just bounced off somehow. He was on. But yeah, it was a good game down there in Mississippi. It was a cold game. And actually, fellas, I think it was a good tune-up game, as this week we got Kentucky headed to Lexington, Kentucky, to Kroger Field, 3:30 on Saturday. It's going to be another cold game. It ain't going to be a night game cold, but it's going to still be cold up there in Lexington. Mark Stoops got those boys playing as they usually do. I like the way Mark Stoops plays. I think he generates as much as he possibly can with the amount of talent that he has. And year to year, he can give some teams some issues. What are your thoughts going into this game against Kentucky? Georgia looking to stay undefeated. That's the name of the game from here on out, right? So what are your thoughts going up to Lexington?
If I'm being honest, I think it's they might benefit from being at home, you know, but, you know, man to man, I think it's going to be trouble just looking back at the issue that Tennessee gave them with their defense. Mm-hmm. And their defense it ain't a tenth of what Georgia's defense is. And so it's going to be tough on their offensive line. You know, I know versus Tennessee, they had issues at right tackle. I can see them having some trouble without front. So I think they're going to put the pressure on Levis pretty good. I think we're going to be in pretty good.
What do you got, Trey? What do you got on this Kentucky game?
Ooh, they did just lose to Vandy, though. Ooh.
Listen.
Vandy's gotten better, though. I mean, we gotta give him a little bit of props. I mean, it's one of those years where the Missouris are you know, beating some people. The Vandys are beating some people. I mean,
you can't even say beating some people. That's Vandy.
Lamar, keep it funky, man.
Big ups. All right, look, big ups.
Keep it funky. And listen, I watched Mike Wright play his whole career at the Academy down here in Atlanta. I love Mike. There's his brother Taco up there at Vanderbilt. I love to see them do well, but they're Vanderbilt. and Kentucky lost to Vanderbilt.
Hey, well, big ups to them, though, fellas. I mean, come on, give them some props, because that's the first victory they've had in a long, long time in the SEC. So,
yeah, that Vanderbilt, though. Them boys got a so-called top five. Man, look. Stetson got to be top five pick now, because Will Levis couldn't even throw over 20 yards on Vanderbilt.
Listen, the draft experts still got Levis up there.
Well, hold on a second. They still got AR-15 up there, too. So, a lot of people still got him going top 10, top 15, and that's nuts.
I don't know about that. I forgot who list it was. It might, you know, AR is still in the top, you know, 40 players, you know, that people have in the draft, though. Yeah, so, you know, and I get it. What did I just say a few minutes ago? What it's about?
Traits.
It's about traits. And if you look at AR, he has traits.
He got Justin Field traits.
Yeah, he's got a pistol arm, and he's hard to bring down. And if you look at the way the NFL is going now, the NFL is averaging 4.5 yards of rushing per attempt now. That's the most since. It's the most ever in league history. 4.5 yards an attempt league wide. It's the most in NFL history. And so, you know, quarterbacks with legs are becoming, you know, we saw it before, but it's even more of a premium now. You see what Justin Fields is doing. And, you know, Lamar, Fields is probably going to break a record this year. So, listen, it's going to be interesting what someone feels like they can do with AR, you know, at the next level, because he does have some traits.
Well, Graham, we just got on your favorite guy, AR, in Florida, but we were talking about Kentucky. Welcome to the show, brother. We're glad to have you here. I know you're not feeling so hot. So what you got on Kentucky or anything else about AR?
Well, I mean, when you guys were talking about AR, you just described Will Levis, right? Like big arm, yeah. Hard to bring down. I mean, I don't think he's got like the open field ability of Richardson, but you know, he's good in the pocket, and he's one of these dudes that everyone's infatuated with because of how Josh Allen turned out, right? Like Josh Allen has ruined quarterback evaluation for the next
Josh Allen gotta get some guys paid.
Yeah. Totally.
Even if they stink for a year, because Josh Allen was looking like Zach Locker at first.
He was 50% completion at Wyoming, man, in college. But I mean, with Kentucky this week, my thing on Kentucky, you know, even going back to the offseason, I remember people getting mad at me on Twitter because I was just like, they lost the number one ranked pass blocker in the SEC and the number four ranked pass blocker in the SEC. And those two guys were both top five ranked run blockers in the SEC. Like, they lost two, like, first round type of guys at offensive line in Kennard and I forget the other guy, but I mean, that was the secret sauce for them last year, right? It was like Levis was good because he's always throwing off play action, and you had to respect those play action run fakes as a defense because their run game was very good. And they had oh my God, who was the little dude that was the transfer from Nebraska?
Robinson.
Yards. Robinson. And I mean, like, they don't have those pieces anymore. And I think this offense has become – I mean, the offensive line has been a problem all year long. And, I personally believe Chris Rodriguez might be the best back in the SEC, him or Judkins probably right now. But he's just – I mean, he's getting hit behind the line of scrimmage more than he's not. And so I think with all that going on, you talk about a Georgia defense that was just able to shut down the run on two straight opponents while playing like a lot of three-man fronts and a lot of light boxes. And this week, they don't even have to do that, right? So I think they're going to be fine. I think they have a chance to shut Kentucky out.
Nice. That's a good evaluation, Graham. See, that's why you're here. You're here for those that breakdown of film. You know, that analysis, that top flight analysis, you know, we're still, fellas, I think we got our guests trying to come into the building right now.
Beautiful.
We got a big time guest, George.
Yeah, one of my old teammates used to be one of my pups and grew up to be the big dog. big dog. I don't know if anyone is more decorated.
Let's see. He's still joining, so.
And that's real. Do you know anybody more decorated as far as trophy, postseason? Like, he won everything there was except the Heisman. Yeah. like literally. if he was up for it, he won it.
That's interesting, you know what I mean? Because, like, I think if it was now, he probably would have.
What, won the Heisman?
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
There's a lot of options now these days.
Still tough on defenders, though.
Yeah.
It's still pretty tough. Like, offense is such at a premium right now that these cats are putting up, like, video game numbers. So they're gonna be in the run anyway. You know what I mean? It's gonna be tough to beat offensive guys nowadays. Might have to have a two-way guy. DP, the boy DP.
Big Fizzle, what you know, no good, brother.
How you doing, man? appreciate you joining 100 Sanford tonight. Let's back up. You know, Lamar likes to do a little introduction, so we're going to let you do your thing.
Allow me to introduce myself.
Dang, I might have to mix that one in there, Foss. Hey, fellas, we got a DGD. We got a bona fide superstar that played in Athens. Heck, I think he would have been the original J.J. Watt or T.J. Watt of the NFL had it not been for some minor things that happened. But he is a GOAT when it comes to defensive side of the ball. He's a football analyst for ESPN. He is a superstar individual. He is none other than David Pollack. What's going on, DP?
What is up? Excited to be here. Y'all, you give me all the praise coming in, but Big Fizzle can tell you, he used to vault my booty, bro. I never played defensive end a day in my life. I came in as a fullback. Georgia. Everybody got hurt. I moved to defensive tackle my freshman year. Everybody left the NFL with Millard and Adrien and Charles Grant and all those guys. And they're like, hey, go to DN in the spring. You know who I got to go against? Big Foss and Stinchcomb. Never played DN in my life. That was a really fun spring.
I forgot that you play inside a little bit.
Oh, yeah, bro. I go to spring ball and go against two first-round picks and get my booty whipped all spring. And then I'm like, oh, I better do something about this. And maybe get in the weight room and get to work.
Hey, he did something.
It worked.
Who is this dude? He's balling out, man. We're glad to have you here, man. Talk some ball, man. We got Kentucky this week. I know you've been watching all kind of football. I don't know how much time you spent on Kentucky. But, you know, what does the Dawgs have ahead of them this week, man?
Well, I mean, we know what it is. It's just like last week. It's us. It's on us. We're obviously way more talented than Kentucky. But, you know, Kentucky has Will Levis, he's probably going to be a first-round pick. He's got a first-round pick frame. And he's got that frame that reminds you of Josh Allen because he's so big. It's 6'3", you know, 230, 240, can run you over, can run. You know, they got Chris Rodriguez in the backfield, who's a really good, powerful running back. Their line hasn't been as good as they've been in the past, so they've struggled a little bit more than normal because they haven't been able to run the football. But they had a new OC this year that's come in, and the system's a little bit different. And start of the year pretty good, but they've been kind of leaking oil. And obviously last week, oof. Losing to Vanderbilt is not something you want to put on your resume. but I think it's on us. We're clearly better. This is one of those, you know, mature trips. And, you know, I think we got a lot of guys with a lot of experience. It's crazy, man. You look at this team and you think about winning a natty last year and being great. And then you think about this year where they're at and got 15 guys drafted and you lose all those guys. And, dude, we're young. I mean, I try like, to tell look people at this defense.
Like super duper young.
Super young. And just
not just freshmen, but a lot of sophomores, too. A lot of first-time players. Yeah.
I mean, you look on D where we're improved at, you know, safety overall. You got Bullard, a sophomore. Malachi Starks, a freshman. You know, Lassiter stepped up at corner, who's an underclassman. You know, Ringo can obviously go to the draft, but you look at JDJ, you look at Brinson, who's getting a lot of playing time. I mean, you look at, I mean, all these guys that play a ton of reps and play, you know, rotate in there. I haven't mentioned a senior yet. And Jalen Carter, obviously, he's going to be gone because he's going to go get that bread. But, but that dude's an absolute freak show animal. So, I mean, it's still a relatively young team. And then next year with Bowers and McConkey and, you know, a lot of the offensive line coming back and Carson Beck will take the reins probably and be the guy. And it's great to be a Georgia Bulldog right now. There's a dang show.
Do you see it how I see it? I see this team as we've obviously just said that how young they are. But I feel like it's a team that's still ascending. Even though they're number one in the nation, they're a team that's still ascending, you know, as far as they're very young. They've been missing a lot of people. You know, could get AD back at any moment. Like, they haven't been – they're number one and undefeated and still haven't been full strength all year. Do you agree with that assessment or what?
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at AD's their best receiver. And he's been out, you know, for the majority of the year. And you saw after the championship game, he was a heck of a lot better player this year than he was a year ago. And then you look at, you know, defensively, losing Nolan Smith is a big deal. You know, that's a big loss. Just he wasn't the best pass rusher in the world, but that dude had so much juice in life. And if you want to know all you need to know about Nolan Smith takes a roster spot on the road. Like, that's how important he is. Somebody a weeks ago, you fought this. You would love this dude. Like, he is the Energizer freaking bunny. Like, he's talking to everybody. I mean, I was in the weight room one day, and that dude walked up to somebody and was like, "Hey, man, that's not how we do it here. Like, get your beepity bleep bleep, I can't say that, to class. Like, you get to class. Wow. That's how we do it around here." And I was like, "God dang." He's just a great leader, so much an infectious, contagious personality. So, you know, I think they can continue to grow. You know, defensively, Lassiter's only going to keep getting reps. Malachi Starks, Bullard, all those guys. Mikael Williams is getting reps. Brinson's getting reps. All these guys that are JDJ, all these guys that are young are getting reps, are seeing it, knowing it, understanding it, and continuing to be able to do more and more. So, yeah, I definitely think this group can grow, continue to get better. And, you know, you got Kentucky, you got Georgia Tech, you got, LSU in the SEC championship game. And then, you know, last year you lost in the SEC championship game. Can you keep it focused and keep it together the whole season?
DP, how do they maintain that? I mean, if you lose Nolan, he goes off to the next level next year. How do they maintain this ascension to being truly a dynasty? I mean, me and George were talking about it before you guys came on. How can they maintain that? Is it a culture thing? Is it a Kirby thing? Is it a player thing? What is it in your opinion?
Well, first of all, it's a recruiting thing. We recruiting like some bosses. I mean, that helps. So you got the next guy that can, you know, step up and fill in. And, you know, we didn't take transfer portal guys this year. Like, Alabama took a bunch of transfer portal guys. We didn't really take any transfer portal impact guys, and you know, still able to do what we do after having 15 guys drafted. So I think it's, you know, first of all, you go watch the Tennessee tape, and you watch. Okay, just go to Big Foss's position. You got the offensive line. You watch them; they clean up piles. I mean, they clean up piles. They block down the field, and if somebody's near the pile, they gonna clock them, lay their body on top of them, slap some beef on them, and like it and enjoy it. You watch the defense play that Tennessee offense, and you watch discipline, fundamentals, toughness across the board. And, you know, Kirby's just done an unbelievable job. You know, I think Nick with NIL has had a little bit of trouble handling guys that are getting paid. You know, Bryce Young, before he took a snap, was making over $1 million. You know, it's a different way to talk to kids. And I think just Kirby's culture and Kirby's, you know, everybody is the same. Nobody is beyond reproach. Everybody going to get that ace chewing. Like, he going to come for everybody. The coach is going to get it. Like, if you listen to him with his beautiful microphone on in practice, he walks around with that, you know, banana mic on, and he's just giving the business to everybody who's not holding themselves to a standard. And I just think that there's, you know, just like Kirby's message when he started the SEC media days, I love the way he set the tone for the season. He's like, "Listen, we ain't the hunted. We're hunters. That's what we do. Like, we're going to hunt everybody. Like, we ain't doing that bull crap mentality. Like, we're up here. We ain't up here. This is a different group. Ain't those 15 guys ain't coming back in this locker room. Like, y'all ain't done nothing. You're going to have to go earn it and go get it." So I think it starts at the top. It starts with the way they recruit, and it starts with that culture that they've built that they're going to continue to hopefully keep around with a bunch of guys that know what it looks like and how to do it.
When you talk about that, you know, the recruiting obviously has been elite, but, you know, Alabama, Ohio State, they're also kind of recruiting at that level. Is the secret sauce a little bit in the fact that you do have guys like Bullard and McConkey who, you know, former three stars? I mean, McConkey had 2 P5 offers, and those guys come in and, like, not only do they turn into players, but it feels like at Georgia there's a element that maybe doesn't exist at every other program where guys come into the program, even if they are walk-ons, and they believe they can get on the field. And is that just competition and practice and kind of the DNA that Kirby's built into this thing?
I think so. I think that has a lot to do with it. Look at a guy like Mims, who mm-hmm. you know, one of the best recruit offensive line recruits in the country, sits all last year. Mims is a guy that sat last year as a five-star, one of the highest recruited kids in the country. And this year he plays spot duty. He plays spot duty as a fresh, as a redshirt freshman. Spot duty. Broderick Jones last year played very little bit after being redshirted as one of the top tackles in the country. They don't leave. They stay because I think they believe in the vision. You mentioned Bullard. You mentioned McCaukey. You know, you mentioned, you should have met like a guy like Bowers, bringing him across the country from California. I talked to the tight end coach at Clemson, or one of the coaches at Clemson, and he said a couple of guys that were there on the old staff that were recruiting Brock Bowers, and he told me this on the field before the NC State game. He said they looked at Brock Bowers and they're like, you know what? I think he's too short. No, he's not short. He's too short. I don't think it'd be great. And you're like, what? And you look at what Brock Bowers, you know, has turned into. How about the evolution? First of all, there's two evolutions that people don't talk about enough. When you look at the evolution of Georgia's offense, and they zigged when everybody else zagged. Nick, what did Nick do? Spread it out. Quarterback centric, wide receiver centric. You got Darnell Washington. You got Bowers. You had Fitzpatrick last year. You went 13 personnel, 12 personnel. You got a lot of guys, and this is crazy to say, you got a lot of guys in college football that all they grew up playing was spread football and 7-on-7. They ain't got a clue how to play in a box against a tight end. They don't play that. Nah, bro, they're good. They want to change people around, be a spread linebacker. They brought it in. Defensively, you know, he took what Nick did, and he became way more flexible. Way more flexible, way less I have to adjust and be in the perfect call. You know, he became more multiple in what he did and jumping in different fronts. And, you know, I think it's just been – it's been the evolution of Kirby. It's been the right mixture of finding guys. I mean, how about Stetson? Like, you know, everybody talks about Stetson and the story that is Stetson, and they deserve a ton of credit. I mean, Stetson deserves most of the credit because – Stetson's the only one who realized apparently he wasn't any good because everybody else told him he wasn't any good, and he's the one who thought he was good and bet on himself. But remember when we were getting ready for the Rose Bowl, Stetson was a scout team quarterback at Georgia. He was Baker Mayfield running around. Stetson Bennett leaves to go play junior college football. Kirby's recruiting at a stupid, insane high level. What did Kirby do? Kirby gave him a scholarship. He scholarship Stetson Bennett, brought him back. And now look, like, we've had all these quarterbacks from me and Foss's era to David Green to Stafford to Aaron Murray and all these guys, and the freaking mailman delivered a championship. Like, I mean, so
the crazy thing is he's if you just look at it, of course you got to play the game, but I don't see any reason why he can't win another one, and that's just insane to me.
It's nuts. And here's another. I got another story for you. Last season, bro, in camp, last year, Coach Denny Rex Stetson Bennett got a quarterback. In fall camp, this is how many reps he got. One of the coaches came to Stetson and said, hey, bud, we got Vandegrift as a five-star, we got Carson Beck was a four-star, and we got JT Daniel, who's a five-star kid. Like, listen, if your goal, Stetson, is to play college football, you should probably leave. Dude didn't get quarterback gets hurt. Now it was about, okay, Stetson had got some reps the year before JT took over, remember, and looked solid. You could run a little bit. Your line wasn't where you wanted to be. Could steady the ship, knew the playbook. And then, boom, that dude comes in and wins a national title. So, you know, crazy story. But I think it's been Kirby's evolution offensively, Kirby's evolution defensively, Kirby, the way he talks to players, his pride, his love for Georgia, and what he's done has just been stupid, man.
Well, DP, you're on a national level now, this is kind of like a two-part question. One, are there any programs out there that you think that can replicate what Georgia's doing right now? And my second question would be this. Why isn't Georgia then getting all the national hype that it should? Because it seems like everybody's finding a way to say they're going to get knocked off. Somebody else is number one. Georgia's not who they are. I mean, what's up with that?
Well, first of all, that ain't a bad thing. I think the happiest person in the world was a Tennessee week was Kirby when Georgia came out number three in the country. He was like, that's a great thing. But I do think, you know, my dad texted me last week after the show, and he was like, dude, we're the number one team in the country. Obviously said we. He said, we're the number one team in the country. He said, y'all didn't talk about us one time on game day. And I was like, well, you know, it's a Mississippi State game, and I think everybody just kind of – it's funny. It's kind of like Georgia's being taken for granted a little bit right now, which – It ain't the end of the world. It ain't a bad thing. It's a good thing. But, you know, I still, if you're a Georgia fan, like, just enjoy the piss out of this. Because I remember coming into this season, all my Georgia fans and friends, they're like, how good are we going to be? I'm like, who cares? And like, what do you mean? I said, we got a freaking championship. I don't give a dang how good we are this year. Like, I don't care if we suck. We got a daggum ring. And I was excited. But to do this and just to prove the staying power – I think Georgia's the new standard of college football. To answer your other question, was who else could be that? LSU is building. You know, you look at LSU and what they've done this year kind of ahead of schedule. And you look at Harold Perkins Jr., who's a freaking dude. I mean, he's a building block for the future for LSU for years to come with his ability to get off the edge and what he can do. So I think LSU is a team that will be on the rise that you'll have to look to. I think it's interesting to look at Bama and Clemson because I think they're both in a stage of, you know, transition. And are they trending in the wrong direction now? And I think they are. I think they're trending in the wrong direction. I think Bama will make changes. I'd be surprised if they didn't make some changes and you see some things shift around. But they're still recruiting on a crazy high level. And they'll still be very, very successful, both those teams. But I think the standard now is honestly become Georgia.
Let me ask you this, because I didn't quite follow him super closely. What makes Brian Kelly a good coach? He's obviously a good coach, but what makes him a good coach? What's his thing?
He's a great offensive mind. He's always been a really good offensive mind, called plays for a number of years, extremely knowledgeable about football, you know, knows the game, knows it inside and out, knows how to develop players, does a really good job developing players. When they hired him, I knew they got a really good football coach. But the way he handled himself at first was kind of weird and kind of strange with him and his family coming down and, you know, the photo shoot and all that weird jazz. I was like, is this going to jive? But you knew he was an excellent coach. So I think BK's intense. He's got, he has a lot of expectations. He's done a great job developing kids. And honestly, he came to LSU to win a championship. I mean, that's the sole reason. He got tired of playing, you know, Nick Saban and company in the playoffs with one arm tied behind his back. I mean, he wanted to go with a fair fight. He wanted to go get the same dudes, and he wanted to see how he stacked up against the best. And he is a confident individual, extremely confident. You know, some would take that further in a statement, you know, but he's confident. He's demanding of his players, and he's always been a great, great offensive mind.
I noticed when we were talking about, you know, kind of other teams on the rise who can challenge Georgia, that Tennessee didn't come up despite the year that they've had. And I'm curious to get, like, you know, you as someone who played the game and obviously are, you know, studying it week in, week out. Like, what is your impression on their offense? And is it sustainable when you get to kind of the elite competition, or will it always kind of hit that freeze point like you saw it do in Athens when they played the Dogs?
Well, I think it's important to know that it didn't hit the freeze button versus Alabama or LSU. I think it's important to just say that, because this is not like a trick 'em offense. It's different. It's unique. It's Art Briles, by the way. It's not like a the only difference in this offense and Art Briles is this offense runs the football more consistently, and this offense uses tight ends at a better rate and a more successful rate. And I think QB run game, you know, adding those elements, and they had a little bit more with RG3. But I think The difference is they've also added those stack and switch release on the outside. And the reason that that came about, because Big 12, nobody played man. SEC, everybody plays man. So I think Josh Heupel did a really good job tweaking the system. But here's the thing. It's got a 25-year-old quarterback who is super mature, who's learned the system, who's like Joe Burrow was, just studies ball, you know, knows it inside and out, is a flatliner, you know, knows his, does a good job with his answers, throws the ball outside the hash really well, throws the ball deep really well. But if you look at their roster, it's an older roster. I mean, most all of those guys are going to be gone. And, you know, can they recreate transfer portal magic again? Michigan State couldn't. You know, Michigan State could do it 1 year. And you look at Michigan State this year, and they're pretty awful. And it's been a struggle. You know, they found Kenneth Walker the year before, though. So it's going to be interesting next year. I think we'll learn a lot about hype. Well, I think they'll be competitive. You know, they're spending a lot of money on a quarterback. They recruited a quarterback kid and, you know, gave him a lot of cheddar in the NIL. And I think he's supposed to be legit. So can he be that guy that comes in and, you know, keeps them going in the right direction? But I think Tennessee next year will tell the tape on their future.
You know, you mentioned the NIL, and I like to ask everybody about that and the impact of what NIL has done. Is it sustainable in terms of these programs that continue to throw money at these kids versus programs that really try to, quote unquote, build it the right way and say, hey, you know what, if you're here, the NIL dollars are going to come. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, especially with all these high figures being thrown around about certain players.
Well, I mean, we can talk all you want about coaches, and we can discuss the coaching ranks, and we can go down a list of the best coaches in college football. You're a heck of a lot better when you got some freaking dogs. So you got to recruit. I mean, you got to recruit at a high level, and you have to embrace the NIL. You know, it's got to be embraced at some form, way, shape, or form. And I'm not saying it's got to be all in, you know, with A&M like mm-hmm. they were. I'm not saying it has to be, you know, where everybody's building funds and paying people out the wazoo. I think what you see in NIL is people go about it a different way. Some people are all about throwing around big numbers. Some people are all about, hey, you come here and you're going to get it, but you're going to have to earn it a little bit. And I think it's smart to do a little bit of both, but you can't put all your eggs in the back. Because here's the thing. Here's the thing that's important. When you pay a guy $1 million to come to your school, he kind of owns you a little bit now. Like, right. You got to talk to that dude a little bit different than me and Foss got talked to, okay? Like, you can only afford so many of those guys. Like, you can't just be like, you know, because – and here's the thing now. You talk to him wrong and he gets all sour, he's going to jump in the portal. He'll go get Quinn Ewers. Quinn Ewers got $1 million from Ohio State, got $1 million from Texas. That's a heck of a 2 years. Like, that's pretty solid. That's a really good life. So I think that you got to find a balance, but you can't let the NIL own you, and you can't you know, buy every player, because and then it becomes toxic and everybody owns you, and it's just a tough world to navigate. It's not going anywhere, by the way. The money's there in college football. The money's going to continue to grow, and the figures are going to keep being asinine, and the kids are going to get a piece of it. And listen, kids have been getting a piece of it for a long time. Now it's just a little bit more above the board, and everybody knows about it. So I tend to lean to NIL. I call it now it's legal. So
I never heard that one. That's a good one.
But we got
you got anything for the DGD, David Pollock, man? Trey, as you can see, David, Trey don't say much.
Well, hold on, Trey. I'm gonna follow this up. So we got the college football playoffs that just came out.
Lamar does, though. Lamar ain't.
Oh, I can talk all day, baby. I can talk all day. Bring me on ESPN with you. College football playoffs. All right. What do you think about these rankings in the long run? Who do you think are going to be these top four programs that are going to be playing for this national championship?
Oh man, I think. I think it's going to be Georgia. I think it's going to be I think obviously the winner of Michigan, Ohio State is absolutely in. If Ohio State loses, they're still very much in the conversation. If Michigan loses, they're out. You know, remember, Michigan bought their way out of the UCLA game this season. So that would have been a good out-of-conference game for them. They played Colorado State, Hawaii, and UConn, the best team being UConn out of that group, who won six games and got bowl eligible. So that out-of-conference could hurt them. TCU, very much in the mix. They got to go at Baylor. They'll have to play a Big 12 championship game, which obviously they can lose to. I think Tennessee's sitting in a great spot. I mean, Tennessee has nobody left in the schedule. Who they got? Missouri. I mean, they're just – it's going to be – they're going to win – they're going. No, they just played Missouri. They're going to win their next two games pretty handily, and they're going to be sitting there when everybody else is going to have to play a championship weekend game, and they're going to be like, yeah, this is fun. USC is another one that's going to be, you know, very much in the mix. And they got USC's got a lot in front of them. You know, they can still avenge their only loss with Utah. They play UCLA this week. They can play. They play another. They're going to have a couple highly ranked games down the stretch for them that might catapult them. But I think Tennessee's going to get in. I think Georgia's going to get in. I think Michigan or Ohio State obviously is going to get in, and then it's going to get just weird whether TCU can continue to stay undefeated, which I think is going to be tough because the Big 12 is very competitive.
Let's stay on the playoff subject right quick. I saw earlier today, it might have been on The Athletic, they were talking about what the 12-team field would look like this week.
Yeah.
And we had a conversation earlier in the year about it might water down, you know, the playoffs. And, you know, I'm all for it. I'm a football junkie, so I watch all of them. I'm looking at this 12-team field. It's not bad. Like you got – they had, like, the top four. They say Georgia, USC, TCU, Ohio State. The other – eight teams, you got Alabama, Clemson, Michigan, UCF, Tennessee, Penn State, LSU, Utah. I'll watch all of that.
Sign me up, bro.
Oh, yeah, sign me up for that one.
Sign me up for all of them.
That's not bad right there. 12 sounds like a lot of teams, but, like, there's some good teams in that 12. Are you pro expansion, or you kind of like it where it is? Because that looks good to me.
I want more football, and there's a couple reasons I want more football. I want more football because I want more fan bases and more teams into it late in the season. I want people to be sitting there with everything on the line playing. I want players to finish seasons all the time. I want to see the best players in college football competing and playing, not sitting and watching, you know, down the stretch. And we haven't had any of that yet, but I'm sure it's coming, you know, in the very near future now, who's going to skip games and stuff like that. But I am all game for the college football expansion. I think it'll be a lot of fun. I don't think it's going to change a thing. I think you're still going to have the same teams that would have won. But, you know, more of a battle of attrition. You know, injuries might matter more. How they schedule the at-home playoff games will be so dope. I mean, that will be awesome to see teams host playoff games in such a big magnitude. So I'm all for it. I'm with it.
All right. Before we let you go here, I got a little fun fact for you. Today is November 16th, which marks the 20-year anniversary of you guys going to Auburn and winning Georgia's first Eastern Division championship. So just curious, any memories you guys have specifically of that game? And, like, I always say, like, I grew up during a kind of a bad era of Georgia football that you know, really started to get better when Coach Rick and you guys came along. But, you know, do you guys take pride or recognition in sort of, you know, what Georgia has today, really starting with your group 20 years ago?
Go ahead, Falls.
I agree. I think what you're seeing now started that year. And then you guys, you know, David and them, they kind of just kept it going. Well, you were still there in 05, right?
Yeah.
So y'all won it again. You got another. So you got two SEC championships, right?
Well, I was there 04, 05. We lost my 04 year. But we won 02 season. So, no, we The year after I left, shocking them won the SEC championship.
So it just kept building up, and that's the only championship I have in any sport, any level, Pop Warner, in anything. So that was an important game for me, and I'll never get tired of seeing the replay of me running down with that cast on my arm to celebrate with Michael Johnson.
One arm Willie. Hey, first of all, another false story. False, we used to call, and I don't know what rate of podcast we are. I try not to swear anyways, but False had that strength. When he got the hands on you, like, it was over. He had that stupid alligator grip, man. I mean, so when he had that cast, it was so much more fun to go against him because you just had to beat one hand. It was awesome. But I'll never forget that game because Cadillac was hurt, I believe, and Ronnie Brown went to work on us in the first half. I mean, he went to work. He murdered our defense. Yeah,
he was going berserk.
Yes, he went bananas, and False can attest to this, whether he wants to admit it or not. The defense was kind of what carried our team for all of False's years because it dang sure was David Green and those bums on offense.
Y'all had a sick defense.
Yes.
Like top three defense in the nation.
Yeah, we were pretty good. When we scored over 17, we never lost a game. So that shows you that's all we needed from our offense. But, you know, the second half, we got stops, and we shut down Ronnie Brown. And the offense kept scoring. We were down big in the first half. And then fourth and 17?
I can't remember. Something crazy.
It was fourth and 17 or fourth and 13. 13 sounds more familiar, I think. And then Michael Johnson goes up and makes that play. And Michael's a good story too, man. And another kid that didn't, you know, worked hard and great dude, you know.
I didn't realize Terrence was out that game. Like all these years, it never dawned on me that Terrence didn't play that game. So Michael had to step up.
Great story. You know, speaking of the mailman, Gibson
had like a thumb injury or something as well, I think, that day. I mean, he was in the game, but was not 100% for you guys.
Who?
Fred Gibson.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Freddie G.
I got one last question for you, man. I never asked this, and I don't think I ever heard you talk about it. That I don't. Do you call it? Is it an interception or fumble? South Carolina. I was out that game. I had that wrist surgery, so I wasn't back yet. And like I was on the sideline. I rode up to the game with Gant, and I'm on the sideline, and I'm like, "What happened?" Everybody's screaming it. I'm like, "What happened? What?" How is that a touchdown? What do you remember about that play? It's just crazy. What do you remember about that play?
It is crazy. There's so many things about that play. First of all, every campus I go to, man, and every time I see so many people and so many fans, it's like I remember where I was when you caught that ball. And so it was one of those things that totally changed the trajectory. I know it's one thing. It's something that instilled – you know, a lot of confidence in me, but I remember the formation. It was Tucson open stud when they went 10 personnel and they ran trips and they had an offset back. We called it Tucson open stud and it was like 95% rollout pass. And so I widened out a little bit on the play pre-snap and the tackle was trying to reach me, which ain't gonna happen when you're in a wide five. And the back was gonna give him a little chip and roll out. And man, I was just trying to get a hand on the ball as the QB was throwing it. Corey Jenkins, and then I hit his arm, and then I go by him when I hit it, and the ball's coming down, and I'm like, oh, sweet. So just kind of reach down like that, grab it, and the crazy thing is, you know, we didn't have instant replay then, and if Shaw wasn't standing right there in the end zone, right where he was at, right where he could see it, he'd have called that an incomplete pass and not knowing what was going on, man, but he saw it, saw me grab it, and, you know, that was – 13-6 ball game, you know, again, low scoring because our offense, that was the only touchdown of the game. Y'all are picking up what I'm putting down. It was crazy. I couldn't do that again in a million years. Like it would never happen again.
I always wondered, did you know what you were doing?
Yeah. You know? Well, no. I didn't know. I was just trying to bat the ball down. And then when I saw it, I was like, cool, and just grabbed it. And I knew as soon as I got up, because as soon as I got up, you know, I lifted in the air and I did the worst Native American dance in the history of the world celebration. It was awful. You know, my little jump up in the air and throw my hands in the air like an absolute idiot, stupid, dum-dum. That's probably next to my South Carolina play. The next thing I get is, man, I used to always just wave your hands the whole time. I'm like, yeah, bro, I like it loud, cuz. I like when you yell and scream and make it nuts in here. So, yeah, it was a nuts play, man. It was a crazy play that I definitely will never forget. And so many fans always – especially Georgia fans, they don't forget it either.
And it was big, man. It's part of the SEC championship year, man. You know, we don't get there without that game because we lost to Florida. So without that play, we probably don't make it to the SEC championship.
Well, DP, before we let you get out of here, we always give our predictions on the upcoming week. This week we got Kentucky. What are your thoughts on this game? Final score, any predictions on who's going to make key plays, anything like that?
Well, I think Ladd's been on a tear. Good to see Ladd McConkey getting back his swag, because we needed. He went through some dropsies there and struggled. And we don't really have, you know, without AD, you know, in there, we haven't had a great receiver play. So I think Ladd will continue to play well, and they'll continue to find him down the field, continue to make big plays. Kentucky's offense is kind of a mess. I'll go 41-10. Okay. Georgia.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Sounds good to us.
Right. You kind of stole me.
Hey, and I got something just for you. Just pass this along to Desmond. Tell him to pick the dogs, okay? I mean, I'm getting tired of him just down us every week.
Why?
He got to pick us.
Hey, you keep doing what you do, Dad. You keep picking against him. You keep being wrong. I am all for it, man. Hey, we don't need to ride the car. We good.
Look, tell me you've been giving him a little bit of crap for that Texas A&M playoff prediction, right?
Well, how would I do that, Grant? Because he picked – Baylor.
Pitt. Yeah.
Pitt.
Wow. Yeah.
So, wow. I don't know how I'd give it to all of them. I mean,
fair enough.
It was ungood. Very ungood.
All right. Well, DP, thanks for joining us tonight. We really, really appreciate you coming on, blessing the show. Tell the people how they can continue to see you, see more of you, find you anywhere else, on TV, radio. Just give us a little plug.
Man, I say everybody just keep listening to this podcast. That's all I say. Keep listening to y'all do your thing and talk about the dogs and my boy Fizzle.
You got your own pod too, man. Plug that.
Man, I ain't here to talk about mine. I'm here to talk about y'all's pod. All right?
We appreciate you.
We keeping it 100.
100 Sapper, baby.
All right, DP. Thanks a lot. We appreciate you coming on the show tonight.
All right, dude. Y'all be going.
All right, you too.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, good fellas. Time. That was David Pollock, the DGD. It was a good interview. Good information from him. What are your thoughts following that interview?
Man, you just David loves what he's doing, man. You know, it gave me the feel of game day.
Yeah.
Just to hear him talk, you know, talk about everybody off the cuff, and hey, so got a little ball. I'm appreciative to that guy for his contribution to giving me my little measly ring. I'm very, very appreciative of him. You know, fun fact, I was on the winning team for his one of his golf tournaments a few years ago. I got a plaque. I'll post a plaque from the account.
Well, that's another championship for you.
There you go.
Yeah, man. The David Pollock Family Foundation Golf Tournament Champion.
So he carried you twice.
Let me know when you need a ringer.
I'm not the ringer. The ringer was on our team, though.
No, I'll be your ringer, bro. You call me up. I'll come play.
What do you shoot, Graham? What's your handicap?
I mean, you know, it's single digits.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You got to come.
But when I get there, don't tell anybody that so I can get a couple extra strokes aside and we can, you know.
Foss, you're not Charles Barkley out there, are you?
No, I'm not Barkley. and I've gotten to where, you know, when I first started, I used to lose a whole tray of balls. You know what I'm saying? Now I can, you know, I can manage not to lose, you know, all my golf balls this time.
Nice. You
know, so I ain't that bad anymore.
Well, fellas, let's kind of get back into the Kentucky game and wrap up tonight. Graham, what are you, in all your film work and breaking down things, I know you've been on some shows talking about the upcoming game. What are your thoughts going into this game against Kentucky? What do you see the Dogs doing and kind of coming out with a victory?
Yeah, I mean, I think Kentucky's going to have a hard time scoring on Georgia. Like, the problem with Kentucky is they play kind of a similar style that Georgia plays. They just do it with less good players, right? Like, they're a physical line of scrimmage football team, which you always have to respect. And, you know, I think Kirby and that staff has a great respect for Kentucky. And, like, you look back at that 2021 season, the team that handled Georgia's defensive line the best probably all year, you know, at least in the regular season, was Kentucky, right? Like, like they made some plays against them, but, you know, Kentucky really did a good job of kind of holding the line. The problem is, like we were talking about earlier, the two studs off that O-line are gone. And so I think, you know, especially with Jalen Carter in the lineup now and how much that OL has struggled this year, like, I think Georgia's going to be able to pretty much shut down the run. And I don't think they have the pass protection or the weapons on the outside for Will Levis to just go and beat you with the arm, right? Like, you know, you look at all the games they've played this year. I mean, that Florida game they won, like, they did it with, you know, pick sixes and one big play action bomb, right? Like, it's just – I think their defense is actually pretty good, but – you know, when you have what Georgia has and you're just kind of throwing waves of, you know, waves of three and outs over and over and over, and that Kentucky defense is probably going back on the field a lot, I just think it's tough. I think Levis, you know, he has the ability to make that wow play, but he'll also throw you one or two. Right. And like that's been a thing with Georgia lately, really, is, you know, they continue to lose the turnover battle, but they continue to win games by, you know, two, three, four possessions going away. It's pretty crazy. But I think this should be a week where, you know, Georgia's at least even in the turnover battle, if not plus one or two. And I just, man, like, I don't see anything that Kentucky can really do to stress Georgia on Saturday in a significant manner.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing when you mentioned Kentucky and the style of play. I like Mark Stoops. I think that if Mark Stoops was at a bigger program, not that it would be Kirby-ish, it would be a much better program. Let's say he was at Auburn. I think Auburn would be a much better program if he was there. Right, and it could happen. He's the kind of guy that I like the way he manages his team with the talent that he has. He doesn't try to go outside of what they can do. He plays to their strengths. You know, over the last few years, they've been able to run the ball effectively. Now they bring in the big arm with Levis, so they're able to throw the ball a little bit more, even though Levis hasn't had the year running away that most thought that he was going to have. He's had some problems recently, but I like Mark Stoops, and I like the way that Kentucky runs their program. Like you said in this game, though, I just don't think that Kentucky has the horses to really run with the Dogs in this game. It's going to be a cold game. It's going to be a game that's going to be built in the trenches, and that's the advantage of Georgia. I mean, if you're talking about the trenches, I think we win the trenches all day long in this game.
Yeah, and I also, you know, that team has been really, really good for years now. I mean, like Kentucky doesn't have, you know, top 20 roster in college football or anything like that, but like they've been really good. I mean, they won 10 games last year. They won a January 1st bowl game. Like, they've been really good under Stoops over the last, you know, 3 to 5 years. But it's also telling that, like, every time he wins 7 games, it triggers like a 7-figure bonus for him.
Yeah,
you know, but for Kentucky, like, what's made them good over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years since they've kind of been on this run under Stoops is that they win games at the margins, right? Like they don't make mistakes. You know, they like don't blow coverages, and like they play really good special teams, and they just do those little things that good football teams do where they don't beat themselves. And I feel like this year, you know, you turn on and watch some Kentucky tape, it's lots of penalties, right? Like, I mean, like that Tennessee game, you know, I mean, obviously they're playing at home on Saturday, but like that Tennessee game, they, you know, continued to just like shoot themselves in the foot, like 3rd and 3, all of a sudden false start. And, you know, you're kicking a field goal instead of scoring a touchdown. And like, they just do all those things that they haven't done in the past. And also, and honestly, like, this isn't really analysis for Saturday, but it does make me wonder if like his time at Kentucky is kind of nearing the end. There was all the comments that Calipari made back in July or August, you know, in the summertime, kind of saying like, hey, it's great that the football program is getting facilities, but like this is a basketball school and the money should be in basketball. And that pissed him off. Like it pissed Stoops off, and it should, rightfully, because Kentucky basketball lost.
I didn't know he said that. That's
was a big deal.
He would have to see me. We would have to talk.
Right. Disrespectful.
Yeah, we would have to throw hands at it. He would have to.
But like, dude, like you coming up short, you know, lately. On scale, if you put it on scale, Kentucky football have been playing better than Kentucky basketball.
Like they're doing more with less, and Kentucky basketball is doing less with more. Like,
no question.
They lost to the Peacocks in the first round of the NCAA tournament, and I didn't even know they were a team until that game. So, yeah, I mean, like, but I think, you know, there's a history of that, right? Like, Bear Bryant was at Kentucky before he ever went to Alabama, and he won the SEC title, and they gave him a lighter, and Adolph Rupp won an SEC title, and they gave him a Cadillac. And, like, that was – you know, I mean, that was many years ago, but that was his moment of like, hey, it's time for me to, you know, go somewhere where this is more important. And like, I think Stoops, I mean, pretty much any job that's open right now in college football would be, you know, I think they'd be happy to have him, but like,
he's a Midwestern guy. You're saying Stoops would leave on his own.
Yeah. I think he might. I'm not saying 100% that I know this is happening or anything like that, but like, I've heard a little whispers over the last, you know, 4 or 6 weeks, and like I think he might just be realizing like, hey, like, you know, we did a really good job here and we've had a really good run, and you know, now it's time maybe for me to go do this somewhere else. You know, he got a divorce a couple years ago, and you know, like I think maybe he just might be in a different spot in his life, in like Nebraska or Auburn, or you know, I'm sure there's gonna be some other jobs that open in the next few weeks that somebody might throw some real money his way, you know, like some $8+ million a year type money for him to go and coach football. And the SEC's tough, right? Like if he did what he's done at Kentucky in any other league, I mean, he'd be a one loss team looking at possible playoff contention, you know, every couple few years, right? So
yeah,
like I don't know. I'm just saying, you know, maybe there's that time that's happening where, because it feels like all the assistant turnover that they've had, like, I mean, Pollock was talking about it when he was on here a minute ago, right? Like, Liam Cohen was a really, really good offensive coordinator. Los Angeles Rams hire him this offseason, you know, and they bring in another guy to run the same system, but he doesn't run the same system. And it's just like, yeah, I think maybe, you know, the challenge of trying to sustain a successful program at a place like Kentucky, maybe that gets old after a little while.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is what, year 10 for Stoops over Kentucky.
Yeah,
I think he came in 2013, so it's be year 10. Well, let's give our predictions, fellas.
He's like,
oh, go ahead, Graham.
No, I was just saying. I mean, he's like the all time. You know, he's the guy you point to when it's like, hey, let's not pull the ripcord on this coach after 2 years, right? I mean, like,
yeah,
they, you know, it did not start great, but once they got going, they really got going.
And that's what we were talking about before you came on, was, you know, what Kirby has built in terms of culture. It's not just the players. I mean, I know DP talked about, you know, we're recruiting at a high level, but you also got to have that culture, man. You got to have the coaching staff. The administration has to be bought in. I mean, everybody has to be bought in for a program to really sustain the winning tradition that Georgia has built, or in Alabama, or even in, you know, going back in the day, we're talking about the USC's and the Miami's. Everybody was bought in. I mean, you know, even if they turned a blind eye to what was going on in the program, at least they're bought in by turning a blind eye. So I think if Stoops goes somewhere and they, you know, he gets that buy-in at a school, and they allow him the 2 to 3 years to kind of rebuild a program, establish a culture, establish his way of doing things, I think would be definitely successful. But let's get into these predictions. We already got DP's prediction, 41-10, Georgia over Kentucky. Let's go to Trey. Trey, what's your prediction on this game?
Give it. I'll go 33-6.
33-6.
Damn, dude. I was literally about to say 34-6.
That's okay. Well, if that's your prediction, that's your prediction.
No. I mean, like, I got to think about it on it now. But Trey.
See, I did have 6, too.
I was thinking 6 points, right?
What do you got, George? Overall score? 42-6.
And it's crazy because I'm thinking 42 is the low end for us, but it seems like lately, Kirby's he's been trying to shorten games after we get up by, you know, a certain amount. And, like, getting over 40, it seemed like going over 40 points lately is just – if you want us to go over 40 as our opponent, okay, we'll do it. But we ain't really trying. You know what I mean? We're definitely trying to shorten games. And it seems like – around the 40 range is probably good. So I'd say 42-6.
What do you got, Graham?
Yeah, Georgia's logic, like that game last year, right? Like Georgia was up 30-6 with 11 and a half minutes to go. And I mean, like they were going up and down the field the entire second half. And then Kentucky went on like an 18 play drive where they called a bunch of timeouts to score with like 10 seconds left in the game, right? So I don't think that this Kentucky team is capable of embarking on, you know, 11-minute drives against this Georgia defense.
Right.
So I think maybe there will be a few more possessions on Saturday than what we've seen in some past Kentucky-Georgia games. I mean, 2 years ago, this was a 14-3 game. Last time Georgia played at Kentucky, which is wild to think about. I think, you know, I'll go 38-6.
38-6. Well, you picked my Georgia score. I was going 38, but I'm also going to go 38-10, Georgia over Kentucky. Much for the same reason you guys have already talked about. I think if Georgia – That's the magnificence of this offense, right? I mean, you mentioned already the turnover differential in a lot of these games. When they want to turn it on, they can at any point in time. That's a scary thing. I mean, they didn't even run the ball well last week, but they could have threw for 400 yards if they really wanted to. Whatever they want to do, they can. And I think that as we get closer to the end of the season, closer towards the SEC championship, health is going to be a mainstay in a thought in the back of Kirby's mind and in the coaching staff's mind. Getting some other guys some reps in case some things do happen, in case you got to play some other guys. So that's why I'm going 38-6. Otherwise, they could throttle them. I mean, they really could. But that's my prediction. Any other thoughts before we get out of here, fellas?
No thoughts, man. Just hope we just take care of business these next few weeks. Get ready for the championship, man. I'm excited about that. We need to avenge that that 2019 loss, because I was not impressed. I took my dad to that game, and we got ran out the stadium. And I want to take him again this year, and so let's not get ran out of the stadium. let's get through these next two games good and healthy, you know, so we can not get ran out of the stadium. let's go into the SEC championship on a tear.
We've had a lot of rough games against LSU in the SEC championship.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
facts. We beat them in 05, but 03, I was at that game. What, 2011? Yeah, 2011 when they had Honey Badger. Mm-hmm. We lost that.
Should have got him that year too, the Honey Badger year. He just took over.
That game was like 6-3 with like 2 minutes left in the first half. Yeah. That was, yeah. I mean, I don't know. That offense just missed a lot of opportunities that day. But
all right, come on, fellas. We got to bring the energy back up. Bring that energy back up. We're going.
Georgia's already like a 2 touchdown favorite on the look ahead line, man. It's LSU.
Yeah, we'll be straight.
And hey, you know, we still got Georgia Tech coming up next week, which, like, you know, we don't talk about Georgia Tech much because there ain't much to talk about. But I mean, you know, in the infamous words of Ray Goff, if you don't think Georgia Tech is Georgia's biggest rival, just lose to them a couple times in a row and see what happens.
That's true. It's really good in my time. Yeah, I saw Joe Hahn a few weeks ago at a cheer competition. we both had daughters doing that thing. Joe Hahn's just one of the best players ever in college football.
Heisman runner up.
Yeah, he was.
Ever.
I did the live broadcast on the lead into the national title game with 680 the Fan from Indianapolis last year, and Joe Hamm was there on air before I went on, but he was turned up, man. I'm not sure if he made it to the stadium or not. he gave his all, you know what I'm saying?
All right, fellas. With that being said, man, let's get out of here tonight. It's been real hanging with you boys and DP. Let's get out of here with another victory this week. Get healthy, be safe, and as always, go Dawgs. See you at 100%. Go Dawgs.
Mizzou.
Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford Podcast. Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com, and email us at dawgs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100Sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sanford.